Over the past decade, over 80,000 jobs left our area. Many cited as government overregulation. What ideas can you propose to roll back onerous regulations that kill jobs? And, general question, why do businesses continue to leave St. Louis? So, regulations, businesses leaving, that issue facing St. Louis, okay? Mr. Haas.
Good thing I walk slowly, it gives me time to think.
3 things. I don't believe that regulation is generally the cause of loss of jobs. Competition between states sometimes is, and we can't keep playing that zero-sum game where the state or municipality like St. Anne and Bridgeton offers more money and gets Walmart. Missouri and Illinois offer incentives for the stadium. We need, and this is part of my main 6 issues, we need to prohibit public monies from being used to steal businesses from other places. Second of all, bringing jobs here is nice. If it's at the expense of someplace else, the country does not become wealthier. So the economists I rely on from the New York Times that I read every day say that you need to stimulate the economy so the country grows with money for infrastructure and education in particular, and I will be a strong advocate for those 2 things in Congress.
In 2010, the National Archives Personnel Records Center began looking for a new home. And of course, the state of Illinois tried to lure them over there. That was 800 plus jobs. We were able to convince the National Archives to keep that facility in North County, and they built a $170 million facility. Have grown jobs there. As far as the city of St. Louis is concerned, the city hasn't changed much in their regulation and their structure since 1950. 1950, they reached their high mark in population, 850,000 people. Since then, they've lost over 500,000 people. The government didn't change, but the burdens are still there for businesses. They still have to go through this complicated, complex permitting, and it needs to stop.
Can I go again while they're?
Thank you, Mr. Clay, for that. One of the things that we need to deal with right away is the fact that we do not have an educated workforce. One of the reasons why businesses are leaving is because they lack this. Another issue that is very important is sustainability. When you have more and more people who are falling into debt and poverty, it is very hard to sustain a business because you don't have people who are able to purchase goods and services. That is a problem. And the other thing that's really important to know, in many of the new jobs that are coming, you have to have a special clearance, for example. At the NGA, the 3,100 jobs that will remain here offer, you have to have a special clearance. If you do not have the educational background that you need, then you're not going to get that job. As I said before, 17% in the minority community is unemployed, and we need to do a better job. When there is greater wealth, then people can have purchase power, and unfortunately, we have been losing that for the last 16 years.
One of the biggest things that employers say we're lacking in our workforce is soft skills. Somehow or another, children are not being educated on how to get along in the workplace. Real simple stuff. Their communication skills are very low. This again relates to a lot of what we see, and I hate to talk about it, but the St. Louis City Public Schools tends to warehouse a lot of young, bright minds. And it's really a struggle. if employers want to come here, they're not certain they have the employable stock. Certainly, onerous regulations play a big role in job loss, but it may also be that tax increment financing plays a double deal. We certainly have seen a huge growth in regulation at the federal level. Now, will that have caused loss here? The federal regulatory environment favors huge businesses, so they consolidate and move.
Some people think federal money is monopoly money. It's our money. And they can build and they can build and they can build. When I have to make a decision as a small business owner, it's a very binary decision. What is the best for the company? When you're trying to create a business here and you have to pay an earnings tax, you have subpar schools, you have education that's failing us. In order to get this area back on track, we have to understand that the measure or the benchmark is not how many government jobs you can bring here, because those jobs only come once in the millennium. When we get back to this region, why is it that the St. Louis area, city of St. Louis, has the highest landing fees in the United States of America? I've flown everywhere. It costs more to land here. If it costs more, you're going to take your business somewhere else. You want to rebuild St. Louis, you rebuild transportation so we can be a shipping area. Another thing you do is you bring tech development to this area. Why is it that every city of St. Louis student isn't learning coding from the time they're in kindergarten? Because if you have a coding skills, then you can get a $50,000 job without a college degree.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Clay, this is yours. Next question, new topic. Excellent questions, folks. You're doing a really good job. The Ferguson Commission noted St. Louis is 19th in population in Missouri, no, not in Missouri, nationally. It ranks only 68th in transit coverage and access to jobs by transit. What will you do to support better transportation in St. Louis for all residents?
Thank you for the question, too. First thing I would do would be able to get the two entities that pay for mass transit together. That would be St. Louis City and St. Louis County. Of course, St. Louis County pays the lion's share. They have a dedicated tax for it. And figure out what are the most strategic routes that make sense for workers to be able to use a system to get to and from work, to get home to work. And we have to be smarter about that in this region. And as you know, the state of Missouri gives nothing to mass transit. But I would work with the two entities, the county executive and whoever the next mayor will be, come up with a plan that makes sense, that transports people from home to work and back.
Unfortunately, in the state of Missouri, we are not utilizing our dollars appropriately where it benefits St. Louis urban core. One of the problems that we must realize is that St. Louis City alone qualifies for more federal dollars for transportation than every single county put together in the state of Missouri. And we're not utilizing that. Literally, the state of Missouri and the federal government have not realized that we have to bring more dollars to the local areas. It is a shame that St. Louis folks have to deal with crumbling bridges, and there's federal money that's out there with the match that will help our roads to be sustainable and long lasting. That's how I would start.
Thank you.
We know that transit is one of the largest issues facing our community. Our bus system doesn't tend to run in any organized fashion. A lot of people may have to ride for 2 to 3 to 4 hours one way to just get to places, particularly hospitals. The hospitals have all moved away from the central corridor, and there doesn't seem to be any plan in place to look at Bi-State as a way of moving people from where they live to where they work. You know, people come from other cities and are amazed at how dysfunctional our transportation system is. I would certainly work to get more light rail available. We made a mistake when we sold out to GM and others and built roads that we now need to maintain and tore out the old trolley system. I'm not certain we can go back to that now. That die is already cast. But we ought to get to more corridor, north-south crossroad. Thanks.
I'm a young guy. I love public transportation. What I don't love is a $2 billion price tag before we address the issues at hand that need to be done before we build. Now, there was a movie by guy Kevin Costner, Field of Dreams, If You Build It, They Will Come. That doesn't necessarily apply to this situation. The first thing that we do is before you spend $2 billion or $10 million to come up with a plan that may or may not happen, let's utilize buses to get people to those routes. If you see you have a factory outside of the line, run a line there. You might take a loss as Metro, but it's better than a $2 billion price tag. Now, long term, I am all for increasing the transportation in this area. But until we address the issues of crime, people don't want to ride the Metro because it's not safe. Bottom line, and we're going to reinvest into that before we deal with our issues. A, before you decide to build the garage on the side of the house, you might want to get the fleas and the rodents inside the house.
The failure and refusal of developing mass transit in the area is due to racism in St. Louis County and St. Charles County, pure and simple. Improving education from pre-K through college will help crime, which will help transportation development. And there is a movement in the country of people moving back to the center city, and that will help access to jobs. I need to correct one or two things in the remaining 30 seconds. I criticized the Post-Dispatch story this morning for something. It was also the finest profile that's been done of one of my candidacies in the 20 years I've been running for office here, and I did not lose sight of that, and it was done by a great writer. And second, although I would never be critical of an opponent at a League of Women Voters debate, Lacey Clay has been my friend for 16 years, and he does the best he can. It's a great family, and if anything changes that during this campaign, I will be sad indeed. Thank you.
Another totally new topic, climate change. What efforts will you make to improve clean energy options, especially divesting Missouri from coal?
You know, there's something that we all have to be realizing here. This is a global epidemic, the fact that we are utilizing resources that are not sufficient. In fact, we are polluting our earth more and more. I would go back to some of the suggestions that were brought up in France, I think last summer. And I would also suggest to everyone in their homes that they make a change. Every single thing that we do at home has, or at work, has an impact of what we do in this world. But unfortunately, with all of the coal, with all of the renewable sources that we have available, we're not utilizing them as best as we could. So I believe in wind energy. I believe that we should look at some of the natural resources as options. But if we didn't have a burning fire in our landfill, we could have used some of the hydrogen and other elements and gases that actually come from our landfill. Unfortunately, there's radioactive waste in it.
I may stand as one of the few skeptics on climate change. I expose my thinking on my website. I'm not going to lay it out for you here, but there is not uniformity in the scientific community. There is not uniformity in the heat growth, all of that sort of thing. There is a lot of questioning of whether this is really true. The other issues that I have with a lot of our renewable resources is that wind turbines kill somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 million bats a year and somewhere around 800,000 birds a year. So that if we're going to keep doing that, we're destroying the environment to save the environment. The other thing is the electric car. What do we do with all those batteries? If you think those batteries are not highly toxic to the environment, you've got another thing coming. Those things are a nightmare that we haven't addressed. We're finding that natural gas puts out a lot less pollution than coal, but coal miners need jobs.
Thank you. Mr. Barrett.
We have one Earth, and we have to respect it. And if you go back to the Native Americans that were at this country before any of our ancestors came, they had respect for the land. So the challenge that I have as a Republican is to take the farmer mentality that many Republicans have and the capitalist opinion regarding our renewable energies or our current energy system. For myself, we are competing against China right now. And it does not mean that we abandon all thoughts of how we're going to keep our environment clean, but it needs to be balanced. It needs to be smart. I'm more concerned about the corporations that are here now, they're dumping stuff, than any individual one of you guys' use. We need to promote clean energy not through government, through people wanting to do. People wanting to recycle, people wanting to not throw trash out. I'm as concerned about people throwing out trash on West Florissant as I am anything else.
Four things. I don't understand climate deniers. You don't want to be wrong on that issue and find out too late we should have done something. And anybody who's running to represent you as a congressperson, we're one of 500. Plus, there's an executive office that Hillary will be running. So one can only do so much without learning to work with others. But you can use that office as a bully pulpit, and I intend to. Two more things. There's an article recently, I know my opponents have read it too, about pig farmers in Missouri, the biggest farms, converting pig manure to methane. So those sorts of steps are in the right direction. And let's talk about coal miners. When we tried to save the snail darter in California that put loggers out of business, I said, if you're going to save the snail darter, make sure you save the loggers. So if we're going to put coal miners out of business as we need to, you need to do something to give them other jobs, retraining, and compensation.
Okay.
Okay.
Great question, too. I will continue to work with this administration and future administrations on the president's Clear Skies Initiative to help clean the atmosphere up. I will push Ameren, Missouri, to close down those older plants that pollute the air. I will push for wind and solar energy. I'm very proud of my record on the environment. I have a 100% rating from the League of Conservation Voters. In this election, I've been endorsed by the Sierra Club because I have voted to protect the environment over and over again. So thanks for the question.
Thank you. And this one goes to Mr. Bailey. New topic. There's a good chance that the 2017 U.S. Congress will be looking at the TARP issue. Where do you stand and why? In 1 minute, Mr. Bailey.
Trans-Pacific?
Yeah.
Are we talking about the Trans-Pacific? I'm a proponent, I'm sorry, I don't know every federal three-letter indicator. I'm a major proponent of free trade. I do not stand with our party's lead candidate for president on this. I think globalization is the way to go. People in Bangladesh need jobs too. Demonizing people who are coming up out of those things. I have not read or are trying to build their own lives. I've not read the trade agreement itself. Ordinarily, the Congress doesn't get a vote on that except at the Senate level for a treaty. But I'm a big fan. I think also that Brexit gives us an opportunity to engage in freer trade with Great Britain and all of its former colonial entities as drivers of a world economy that respects the rule of law.
I couldn't hear you on that. Was that TPP or TARP?
TARP.
Okay. I think that we have to get back to some basics of representing ourselves in this country. And while I think that we, as leaders of the, you know, of the world, actually, that we should look at other nations with some concern and be worried about our allies, things along those lines, I'm more concerned about my neighbors. Friends or enemies, we are all Americans. And that is what I want to put my focus on. So when we get to 2017, what I'm going to be concerned about is the worker, the person that's here. Because that's more important than making sure anybody else is satisfied. Their representatives represent them in the best way that they can, and this nation represents us in the best way that we can. Not for the special interests, not for the lobbyists, not for the ratings here or there to be endorsed by this person. It's about making sure that we as Americans are not shooting ourselves with self-inflicted wounds by trade deals that are just unacceptable. And I will fight those with tooth and nail.
I don't know everything, but I know this. TARP and TPP are not the same thing. So it seems like both issues are on the table. So let me address both of them. In my opening remarks, I said that there are winners and losers in trade deals. This is TPP. And trade deals, if they're good, benefit the country overall, but there are losers, and the government has to be prepared to give compensation and retraining to those employees and companies that are put out of business by the trade deal. It's snail darter economics. If you're not prepared to save the loggers, don't save the snail darters. Now, TARP, as I understand it, was the bailout of the banks and the regulations to make sure that they didn't fail again. So it's Elizabeth Warren, thank you. I'm going to name my next companion animal after her. Do you like the sound of Pocahontas Haas? She's the leader of Too Big to Fail. And, you know, it's in the details. You want enough regulation. You don't want to stifle them. It's a middle ground thing, and it deserves a fair hearing.
And what we're talking about now.
Okay, this is the question. Since I don't do it to one person, there's a good chance that Congress will be looking at the TARP. Is that what that says?
Okay, the question is, there's a good chance that Congress will be looking at TARP. Possible. It's hard to predict that, though. I know that with the Dodd-Frank reform, which I helped push through our Financial Services Committee, we were able to put in some common sense protections for consumers. It's called the CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Up to this point, it's taken in almost 1 million complaints, and according to Elizabeth Warren, it has rewarded American consumers, awarded them over $11 billion when they've caught predators, when they've caught bad actors trying to rip off the American consumer. So I don't know if we need to correct any part of Dodd-Frank, but you can bet they've been trying to attack it from the Republican side and to whittle it, take some of its power away.
I have to tell you, I side with Elizabeth Warren 100% of the time and will continue to. That is very important for you to understand in this debate as I and many others are running for Congress. It is unfortunate that there have been several entities in Congress who have been voting against the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. One of the things we have to deal with are hedge funds. And the fact that there are so many entities who are on the Financial Services Committee who are trying to limit the protections that every single individual has. This is a bread and butter issue, ladies and gentlemen. It's bread and butter. When we talk about citizens losing their wealth, we cannot afford to have anyone in Congress who is going to be bought and paid for by any bank, any corporation that is trying to weaken the strength of the individual.
This will be the last question before their summaries. Background, there's some of the question that deals with Medicaid issues, which is a state issue in which Congress has no more, they don't decide which states do Medicaid or not. So this is at the federal level we're talking about this question. Will you work toward the public option, adding a public option to the Affordable Care Act, plus give Medicare the ability to negotiate prices for prescription drugs?
Once again, I'm going to quote Bill Haas when he says, too big to fail. The states are the incubator for our democracy. In other words, we don't have to risk the House every time we want to come up with a good idea. We can see if it works in the state first and then move it on. I believe that there's states that these issues may be best for. I don't think that it's the best option in Missouri. I think the best option in Missouri is less government, not more. And when you increase the regulation that's federal, it allows states to not be flexible to do what's best for their state. The best way that we can address the lack of the people that are insured is to get more people with jobs. And I would like to see what a winning economy would do before we decide we're going to subsidize more healthcare. We have people out there that need us, the disabled, the children, the infirmed, and I'm here to support them wholeheartedly. But a man has to work.
Can you read the question?
Yeah,
again,
I kind of got off. That's right.
I want to clarify the question. Will you work toward a public option to the Affordable Care Act? This is at the federal level. Plus give Medicare, federal level, the ability to negotiate prices for prescription drugs.
Yes. And yes. I've been for single payer before single payer was cool. It's good to read the New York Times. For Suicidal Veterans Afraid Lifeline, July 16th, very important issue. Nursing home residents still vulnerable to abuse, and that's been on my radar for a long time. July 25th, New York Times editorial board. July 16th, Times editorial board, Obamacare's kindest critic. The things that we need to fix to make Obamacare better. So it's good to get elected, and it's hard. Tell me about it. It's even harder to get something done once you're there. But having ideas to put on the table is a real good start. Getting them past the cranky Republicans is no mean trick, but anybody who's dealt with me when I don't get my way will know if anybody can do it, I can. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I have always supported the public option. And yes, I've co-sponsored a bill this year to allow Medicare to negotiate pricing. You know, I'm proud that I supported the Affordable Care Act and that we were able to double the amount of money that we got into federally qualified community health centers. That's all a part of the Affordable Care Act because of the healthcare disparity that we experience in this community. It's a shame that the state of Missouri has blocked 700,000 people from getting expanded Medicaid and under the ACA because of the hatred that flows from the Republican leadership in Jefferson City, that they would make punish their own people, close their economic engines, those hospitals in those rural counties, all for the sake of denying Obama a legacy. Shame, shame.
Absolutely, I would support the public option and also leave open the opportunity to negotiate prescription drugs. But one of the failures of the ACA, there are a couple of them that stand out to me. It was 2,700 pages. So imagine how much a legislator would have to read. There are two things. If you have a prosthetic, you're not covered. That is missing from the ACA. Also, if you are a child who has a mental health issue and you have dependency issues, you're not covered under the ACA. So there is a lot of revamping we have to do. I am totally supportive of the ACA, but there are also some areas where we need to do a better job as a federal government.
Thank you. Mr.
Bennett? When it comes to healthcare, I'm a big fan of the laboratory of the states. It's an old Supreme Court phrase. But if we, the people of the state of Missouri, want to have a public option and we want to form our own public insurance company, we ought to be able to do that. Having the federal government do that, however, is going to give most of us health care that looks like the VA system. You may or may not be a big fan of capitalism, but when you look at the 106 medical Nobel Prizes awarded, 100 of them come from the world's greatest capitalist country. You're sitting in it. Medicine, whether we like it or not, a lot of the advances that we have are due to our capitalist system. It costs money to get covered. I noticed when I had two eye surgeries this year, there were something like 45 nurses, 6 doctors, and 7 administrators at the local business where that happened. I don't want the federal government running that.
Thank you. While the candidates finish thinking through their final statements, I want to give you just a little bit of information about the League. We encourage informed and active participation in government, influencing public policy through education and advocacy. We never support or oppose any party or candidate. All the League members here are volunteers. We're nonprofit. To provide services such as these forums, Speakers Bureau, we have over 30 Speakers Bureaus scheduled between now and the election, a help call-in line website for voters, as well as the Voter's Guide for Elections that I hope most of you saw when it came out last Friday. If you didn't, there are copies in the back. This takes countless volunteer hours and a sizable amount of money. We welcome any and all contributions, all of which are tax deductible, so that we may continue to do these services. On September 3rd, we're holding a Celebrate the Vote event across the street. 100 years ago, thousands of women wearing golden sashes, reading Votes for Women, came to St. Louis and silently lined the streets while the delegates of the Democratic Convention walked between their ranks on their way to the Coliseum. This September, we're holding another Golden Lane Parade, celebrating the women throughout our history who made and continue to make it possible for us to vote. Please join us September 3rd. More information is available at the back table and on our website. There are a number of things back there. I want to point out a couple to you. There's a small business size card that has all of our numbers, our help number, our web link, where to go to get a copy of your ballot. We also have the information about information that you need to vote, take with you, also about what are the Missouri rules for a felon regaining his rights to vote, or rights to vote, which we can do in Missouri. Please take advantage of these services. And if you're interested in joining us, of course we'd love to have you. Men or women, 16 and over, that's all it takes. Again, before we start the final statements, I want to thank the sponsor tonight, the Downtown Disability Action Network. And for our closing statements, we are going to start at the other end. So, candidates have 2 minutes for their closing statement.
Fellow St. Louisans, every 2 years we have to make a decision regarding the United States Congress and the 1st Congressional District. As I travel the country, on my business, I see other areas that are thriving. I see other areas that are healing. And I truly believe that St. Louis is lacking leadership on that front. We're in a gerrymandered district. So when you have a gerrymandered district, you need a leader that's going to not only represent the community, but the section of African Americans that have been placed together so they can have a voice in Congress. So the choice is this. Do you want a congressman that's done an okay job? He's went up there and he's been, I guess, the guy, and we all know who he is. Or do you need a congressman that can work with the Republican Party to represent this area at the best of our ability? We are at the end of every single list when it comes to getting things done. Why? Because this district has to go talk to a Republican before they can pass anything. Why don't we skip the favors and let's look at what needs to happen in this area? We need kids that are going to start coding so we can get them jobs. We have to deal with something that hasn't been brought up, which is guns and violence. And when I see my congressional on the floor of the U.S. Congress laying there, the first question I ask myself is, why? When I read the bill that they want to pass, it does nothing to address the stuff in Orlando. It does nothing to address the stuff in Texas. It does nothing to address the crime right here in St. Louis, Missouri. Quite frankly, we need fresh ideas. We need somebody that's going to be creative. Hey, it's time to put QB2 in. Thank you.
So I think we're in NFL draft order. We go up, then back down. Thank you very much for all of you for coming out. And thank you all for the League of Women Voters and Disability Services for sponsoring this event. I hope you've loved watching democracy in action. I think I left my notes back there, but I'll do as well as I can. Maybe let me come. Again, on climate change, I'm puzzled by why nuclear option is off the table. It is one of the safest forms of energy available, and I don't see why we have to kill birds and maybe bees and butterflies in order to have wind energy. It does not make sense to me. I made a boo-boo on TARP. I don't remember all the acronyms in the federal panoply. TARP was the bailout during the failed bake crisis. All the information I have, and I read a slightly different newspaper than my friend Bill, I read the Wall Street Journal. Shocking that a Republican would read that, right? But that tends to blame the whole crisis on the authors of the Dodd-Frank legislation that they ginned up through some oligarchs in the background, the entire crisis by forcing banks into unhealthy loans. Definitely there's some bad dealings at the SEC level, or rather at the trading level. The last thing I'd like to talk about is let's focus on education locally, and I think we do need to take a hard look at decriminalization. It has not worked. 80 years of this, and now we have all these seven-year-olds dying because we can't do something new.
It has been a great pleasure to be here tonight. Unfortunately, this is the only debate that we're having, and that is not good for democracy. Each and every single one of you is going to have a responsibility on August 2nd, and you're going to make a decision on who you're going to vote for. I'm asking you to vote for Maria Chappelle Nadal. There are several issues that came up as we've been talking tonight, but I want to revisit an issue that is my crusade, which happens to be radioactive waste contamination. And I want to finish that question. I would call for a special panel, a congressional panel, to review the EPA. I would also seek a downwinder status for not only Bridgeton, not only Coldwater Creek, but all of the out-of-use landfills that people are working on top of and living on top of now. I would also force the federal government to be accountable for their nuclear waste legacy. I would also push very hard for a buyout for all of those families who are living right across the street from a radioactive landfill. I would also urge for after-school programs for our youth. We have a lot of second chancers in the making, folks. But I also would look for sustainable options for our second chancers. Those are the folks who I was on the ground with in Ferguson, who finally have hope, who finally, finally want to go a new direction. But I would also have frequent town hall meetings. And folks, I'm telling you, you don't have to worry about me coming home every weekend. I'm a hometown girl. I was born here, I was raised here, and I will die here. In fact, I was born on the same street that I live on right now. I think crime and policing is important, but you must leave here asking yourself a question. Is 48 years in Congress too long for one family? I'm Maria Chappelle Nadal, and I'm asking for your vote.
Thank you.
Let me begin by thanking the League for this wonderful opportunity to answer your questions. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to close by reading a message from a friend. And it reads, since the earliest days of my first presidential campaign, Congressman Lacey Clay has stood with me. And today, I'm proud to stand with him in support of his reelection on Tuesday, August 2nd in Missouri's Democratic primary. Lacey Clay has been a fearless, progressive voice with backbone who stood with me against the Republican assault on Medicare and Social Security, and who defended women's rights to make their own health care decisions. Lacey has also courageously stood up to the gun lobby to demand common sense gun safety measures like universal background checks and renewing the assault weapons ban. And Congressman Clay has led the way on criminal justice reform and transforming how local law enforcement interacts with the citizens they are sworn to protect. Congressman Lacey Clay is clearly the best choice in Missouri's first congressional district to continue fighting for the inclusive, tolerant, brighter future that we are striving together to build for every American. I'm proud to strongly endorse his re-election. This message is signed by Barack Obama, and I'm so blessed to have the president's support and his friendship. And I want to thank all of you for being here tonight, too. I never forget who hires me to do this job, and I would truly appreciate your vote on August the 2nd. Thank you, and God bless you.
Two older people were talking about going to heaven, and one said, "I always wanted to ask God why he or she permitted suffering, injustice, poverty, crime, war, and the other hardships of life to exist when they could do something about them. But I don't think I will ask." And his friend said, "Why not?" And the first one said, "Because I'm afraid he'll ask me the same question." So I've aspired to public service all these years, so when I get to heaven, as I believe we all will, and God asks me the same question, why didn't I do something? I have an answer I'm not ashamed of. Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., the poet and the father of the Supreme Court Justice, said once that most people die with their songs still inside them. Not I, if I can help it, and I can. And when in office, it will be my job to try to ensure that yours don't die with you either. That's why I seek your support. And 2 years from now, I expect to have a similar email supporting my reelection from President Hillary. Thank you.
Let's give a round of applause to all of our candidates, shall we? Thank you for coming. Vote August 2nd, make democracy work. Thank you, folks.
Thank you. Nice job.
Appreciate it.
But it was good. I liked it.
You are such a good. You are just such a
good. I will take the compliment.
You need a job.
You are.
You
guys
talk so much.
I'm sorry I didn't see you.
Every single time.
Sure?
No, I
we'll get to see a little more.
Thank you.
Second, I'm going to grab this right here.
Do you need any help at all?
No, I think I'm okay.
I don't want to influence the press if one's the same.
Okay, thank you.
Good to see you, Steve.
Good to see you.
Okay.
You still on the school board?
I am. Well, we got to get governance back.